In the 1700s, most of the 1700s, the Rav of Prague was the biggest posek in Klal Yisrael. His name is the Noda Yehuda, and Landau.
Yes.
Descendants living today in England and other places, and we'll speak about him maybe separately. He deserves a full discussion. He was the Rav of Prague. All the shaylos of the world came to him. Prague was a center of Torah. The earliest mention of Prague in a Torah degree context is actually from Tosfos, the philosopher of Din. The Yiddish name for the two main provinces of Czech was Bohemia and Moravia. It's Bim and Meren. Those were the two names mentioned halacha many times. Bim and Meren about the Minhagim, Rabbonim, and so on. So the 1700s, Prague was a center of Torah. The Noda Yehuda, what he did was make a yeshiva here. There was a big Torah center. He was nifted in the 1790s, at the end of the 18th century. And almost immediately, Prague drops off the map, off the Torah map. We don't hear of Talmid Chachamim. There were a few Rabbanim afterwards. We'll speak of one in particular that is of interest. And the community, as a frum community, as an observant community, evaporates. Somebody, the Chassam Sofer, who is one of his Talmidim, went back home for Ben Azmanim. Chassam Sofer asked him, "Where are you from?" So he says, "Prague." So Chassam Sofer says to him, "Yeah. Man kann trinken Wasser in Prag? Is there kosher water to be attained in Prag?" Basically, that was the situation. And Prague produced many prominent Jews, Kafka and others. Why? I mean, we took a bus trip from Pressburg to here. Pressburg was a vibrant Torah center, and Prague was we gave the world culture and no Yiddishkeit. What's it, Manishtana? It takes only 3-4 hours on a bus, even a bumpy bus. But still, it's why? What's the difference? They were both, in the 1700s, both were, this was more important, Prague was more important. I don't know the answers, but I try to point out some differences that I think are very important. First of all, we said yesterday that some soul made a decision to secure a community of the Orthodox community. We are different, we're distinct. And it's like we spoke yesterday, it's a tricky balance of being distinct and yet agreeable. But at the end of the day, the word Havdalah is a very, very, Avdalah Skamikola Amim is a very powerful message. I once read in a biology book, a textbook. It had a very fascinating. The person posed a question. In a cell, you have very important organs. What is the most important? And you know, there's the mitochondria, there's the nucleus, there's a lot of important parts, and probably it won't survive without any of them. But he said nobody realizes the membrane around the cell is the most important part of it. Because if there's no membrane, it's diluted. There's no cell. A membrane defines that barrier, that little circle defines the cell. Once I have a cell, I can put things in it. But the first, when I want to build a house, the first thing I have to say is where? What are the boundaries? Where is it? This observation was made much earlier than myself. I printed it out. I can't find it, but I'll tell it to you bal peh. Reb Meir Shapiro was once on a visit in Prague, and he wrote an article in a newspaper. Reb Meir Shapiro, the Reb Meir Shapiro from the Daf Hayomi, and he said he comes to Prague, and they tell him Prague is such a Jewish city, amazing. So he comes down to Davin. There's no minyan. So he asks his guy take him around. He says, "Well, where are all the Jews?" He says, "Come, I'll show you. It's an amazing Jewish city." And he brings the Beis HaKvaris and says, "Look how many Jews are here." And then he says to himself, "And look at how many synagogues." And finally says, "And you know the crown of our Judaism? He points to a clock. I'm not sure if it still exists or not. Yeah. It's Hebrew letters on the clock. It's a big town square clock with Hebrew letters. Givar. And he says, and you travel to Pressburg, and you see that. He puts it down, he lists it, and he finishes it. Yes, the Chassam Sofer won. He was right. He said, again, this is Meir Shapiro, so I'm quoting him. He said the Rabbanim in Prague were not so keen on sharpening the division between what it means Yiddishkeit and what's not Yiddishkeit. And therefore, there was a slow diffusion where you could be, it's like the difference between analog and digital. When you have some digital, it either is or is not. When it's analog, it's a shtickle, a little more, still a little more, no clear definition. And when you can't define something, it doesn't exist. I would like to point out two more things, and they're part of the same picture. First of all, we spoke yesterday about Chassam Sofer, and we said there were two groups that deviated from the Yiddishkeit that was going on at the time. There was the Haskalah people, who deviated in small, large, more or less, and there was the Chassidim. And the question was, who's your ally, and who do you need to separate from? In Pressburg, the Chassam Sofer was not terribly happy with a lot of things in the Chassidim. He felt halachically was wrong, like we spoke yesterday about the Zman Krishma, the Nesach Sfar, all these things. But at the end of the day, they are burning hot Yidden. They want Yiddishkeit, they want Torah, they want Kaddish Baruch Hu, and we'll deal with the issues, we'll have trials and tribulations back and forth, and we'll get somewhere. The other people are fairly similar in practice, but they're headed in a different direction, and we need to separate. Prague made an opposite decision, and I don't know who it was, but Prague, the decision was, we are the Hasidim, and the Noda Behuda himself felt he was one of the sharp opponents of Hasidim. And it was a lot more than just that they daven a little later in the morning or the type of kugel they eat or whatever it is. It was deeper than that. You have to understand that the 1600s, Kol Yisrael was destroyed by Shabsi Tzvi. Shabsi Tzvi, when we do our Turkish tour, Mitzvah Hashem, when's the Turkish tour? we'll do the Shabsi Tzvi thing. But actually anywhere in Europe, Prague was, and Pressburg and Budapest, they all were bastions of Shabtaot.
Really?
Yes, Shabtaot spread through Europe. And it was a kind of Kabbalah-based, quote-unquote, super frum for some time. Mashiach is here, we have to get ready for him. Everybody started fasting, everybody started selling their stuff. And he Kabbalahs and Seamus. He was a manic depressive. And then it started spinning crazy. But the idea, and they still had... There was, even in the 1700s, so this was 1600, in the 1700s there was again an upsurge of it, and there were people called Frankists, they followed some named Jacob Frank, who was quasi-Shabsi Tzvi, ended up worse, you know, they all converted, and it was a much more difficult period. So the suspicion was Hasidim are another regeneration of that. We've been burnt once severely by Kabbalah people and people who kind of are mass movement people with charismatic leadership. All of that, the non-rational individual who's charismatic and mystical, destroyed 100 years ago. So Hasidim, we need to distance sharply from us because this is just another growth. And the other people will deal with it. So there was a certain distinction in the tactical arrangement. History has shown us that that's a pretty clear picture of which one stayed the course and, you know, at the end of the day, halachically righted itself and which one went off. So that's a second distinction that I would like to make, and that's possibly part of it. There also, it has also to do with the flavor of the place. If you we spoke about this last year, almost no big city in Europe ever was successful with a yeshiva. Minsk had no yeshiva, really. It had flopped, didn't work. All the little shtetla had. And the problem was because, A, the nature of the people. People lived in big cities in those days were cosmopolitan, bourgeois, interested in being part of a large society. There was a lot of attractions. There were theaters, there were libraries, there were all sorts of salons and cafes. In the shtetla, life was preserved the way it was. And people, by their nature, were much more conservative, much less inclined to be, you know, part of anything. Nobody had a big itzar to become a peasant. In other words, the people you saw around you, were not people that attracted you. So the community tend to become insulated and stay insulated. In the big cities, Prague was a major, major cultural center. That was the nature of it. Bratislava, Pressburg, was a whole different league. It wasn't even the same league. Budapest, on the other hand, was in that same league. So if you'll chart it, you'll see Prague was a phenomenal center of culture. It had strong Germanic influence on it. Vienna, Prague, those cities became maskilim, and there was very little really could do about it. There was nothing there was no walls to contain people. The Pressburg and all the Shtetlach were places where it was possible just by the nature of the place. So, you know, and if you take a look, and the people, they expressed the Yiddishkeit with extraordinarily beautiful ornate shuls. On the one hand, there's Yerushalmi that says one Amora was taking another one around and showing the beautiful shuls in Lod. And he said, wow, how much money did and in a positive way, did our forefathers sink into this place? And the second Amora answered to him, how many souls were lost because instead of getting people to sit and study Torah, they sunk it into the beauty of the building. So the ultimate beauty is the Beis HaMikdash, where Mebayis Mechutzet Zapena, where you have content and, you know, and packaging. But it's obvious, you know, when we look around the places that were magnificent, ornate, and so on, there was a focus on that. A, it was the only thing that would attract a person to come. A shtiebel wouldn't attract a person who didn't have an internal connection to it. And therefore, if you want to attract people, you go to a magnificent place like this. People would come in just out of the majesty of the place. People express the Yiddishkeit in giving. I mean, this I don't know what it costs. We don't have any developers here, but this is it was. So people, so there was a, you know, people had that feeling to put that in. But on the other hand, you know, when you walk into a Beis Medrash and you have 1,000 people sitting and learning Basmada Atzuma in simple surroundings, there's a neshama there. So I think there's a lot to think about, a lot to be responding about, weighing the different elements of Yiddishkeit and what to put a lot of weight on. It is important that a shul and places be presentable, and beauty is the Beis HaMikdash was the most beautiful building. But without a kachi kachim, the outside has no value. The kachi kachim is what's there. And everything should be built around it.